The fact of the matter is, whether you've been in network marketing for years or just a few days, your family and friends have seen your opportunity and your phone is, as we call it, burnt. If you're anything like me, that's a scary thought. So the big question is, how do entrepreneurs like us, who love the network marketing profession, who no longer want to be that guy, and are tired of convincing people during uncomfortable, let's get coffee meetings where they say, what's this all about? How do we market in a way that aligns us with our dream clients and expands our network of upfront and transparent professionals, allowing us to get our time back, our families back, and gain a real passive asset? People like us who value impact over income, we deserve to see our visions once and for all. Join me in this podcast where we'll uncover just how to do that. My name is Eric Sablon. Welcome to Burnt Phone Marketing. What's going on, guys? Eric Sablon here with Burnt Phone Marketing, and I'm super excited. I've got, I'm actually just going to introduce him. I'm going to tell you a little about his story, and then I'm going to let him talk about what he does. And I have a treat for you today, because most people want to get to seven figures. But my guest today went from bootstrapping zero to seven figures to eight figures. So if you want to 10x your business, grab your pen and paper, get ready, because we are going to knock the socks off this one. Brian is the co-founder and CEO of GreenPal, an online marketplace that connects owners and local lawn care professionals. GreenPal has been called the Uber of lawn care by Entrepreneur Magazine. He has over 1,000 active users and completes 100,000 active users, 100,000 active users on his app, and completes thousands of transactions per day. Please welcome Brian Clayton to the show. What's going on, Brian?
Hey, Eric, great to be on the show, man. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, a couple 100,000 people using the app. We're an 8-year overnight success.
That's the funny thing. A lot of people, like, all of a sudden this app came out and boom, they went to 8 figures, 8 years overnight, guys.
It's usually the case. it's usually the case. So GreenPal is the Uber for lawn mowing. So your homeowner, you need to get your grass cut rather than calling around on Craigslist or asking friends or family for recommendations. You can just download our app and somebody will come out and take care of your yard for you. And you can just set it up to happen all throughout the entire lawn mowing season, all on the app. And it just, you know, everything happens like clockwork, from scheduling to quoting to payment. And we've been at this business for almost a decade. Started off very humbly. The first few years were tough getting the marketplace rolling, but my two co-founders and I stuck with it. And here we are, here year eight or nine, doing over $20 million a year in revenue and several 100,000 people using the app. And so we're self-funded too, is another thing, is we've funded this thing off of its own revenues, which is kind of unique to technology businesses and marketplaces. So it's been a long journey, but now it's starting to get to be a lot of fun, because I built out a good team around me, you know, and we're growing. And so now is the fun part.
Yeah, you put the bootstrap time in, and now it's starting to, like, the fruits and the lawn is growing.
That's right. That's right. There's a lot of parallels to the landscaping business and a lawn in general to startups. You know, you have to put in the work. You have to sow the seeds this year for next year. These are like principles of the universe you can almost find anywhere. And for us, you know, it was like the first few years where we're really, 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 really tough. And we ended our first year with something like 25 customers and like $10,000 in total revenue. And we just stuck with it. We kept talking to users. We kept listening to what they're telling us. We kept interviewing both sides of the people, both sides of the transaction, people using the platform and learning from their use, and then applying the learnings into making the product better and better and better. We did that long enough to where we finally built something that was pretty good.
So I had some questions dialed in, but you teed up a great question that a lot of entrepreneurs and marketers out there, they never interview the audience. They never interview the users. They never interview the end user. They just think, you know what? This is my vision. This is how it's supposed to work. Tell me a little bit what your structure was, how you did that to bootstrap. I mean, let's be honest, 25 customers to 100,000 customers. That's a big scale. But what I love what you said. You said we went out and we interviewed both sides of the user experience. Tell me a little bit about how that increase the business? Because
There's a venture capitalist by the name of Brad Feld that does a lot of blogging, really smart guy. And he says, listen to your customers or you'll have none. And that kind of stuck with me. And there was another book I was reading when we first started the business called The Startup Owner's Manual by Steve Blank. And this book is the predecessor to The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. And so those two books are like thousands of pages between all the books these two guys have written. And they really kind of beat into your head one thing: get out of the building and go talk to your users. You have to do that. You have to get that face-to-face interaction with them. You have to get them on the phone. You have to talk to them to understand where you suck, where you're coming up short, and also what you're doing well. And you're going to learn all kinds of things. You're going to learn about what direction you need to take the business. You're going to learn about how to market your business. You're going to learn about what kind of copy you need to be using. You're going to learn all sorts of things. And in the early days of starting a business from scratch, that customer feedback is really kind of free R&D. It's the lifeline to get you through the first few levels of the game. You really want to look at this like a video game, almost like 10 levels. I got to get through level one. Level one might be 100 customers and 10K in revenue. And the only way you're going to get through level one is kind of your customers being that shepherd through the darkness almost. And you need to make it like dead simple for them to talk to you. Remove all the friction. Like, your cell number needs to be on all the transactional email. Your phone number needs to be the main customer support number. You need to be like proactively reaching out to them, because that feedback is the only thing that's going to get you to the next level. And maybe even all up to like level 3, 4, and 5 metaphorically, until you start building a team and start scaling some revenue. That customer feedback is how you can get something going from scratch and build the right thing and not just rely on hope or luck.
Well, yeah, a lot of times we'll do like an ask campaign. Most people do ask campaigns. And for the listeners out there, I'd ask you, figure out some sort of ask campaign to your clients and find out where they're, you know, where they're struggling or what you're doing right. And I love what you said. Put it like a video game, like scale one, level one, level two, level three, and the customer feedback is huge. And just so you guys know, if you didn't catch the names of those titles, they will be in the show notes. So the authors and the titles will be in the show notes for you guys to catch.
It's interesting. It almost never goes away. We got a team of 36 people, and I just hired a new lead of SEO lead, and the first thing she did when we hired her, you know, among 100 other things, the first thing she did is she went to all of the repositories of reviews about our platform. So Trustpilot, Google, Yelp, Facebook, like places external to GreenPal where people review the experience. That was the first place she went to read over hundreds and thousands of reviews to understand, like, what is the voice of the customer sound like? Where are we letting them down? Where are we delighting them? What kind of words do they use? How do they express what it is they want? Like, literally, do they say yard or do they say lawn? Do they say grass or do they say turf? All of these things, like, that was the first place she went, was to learn about like the mindset of the customer, to learn about like the customer logic, and let that inform the SEO strategy. So I'm sitting here thinking, I hired you for SEO. Why do you give a crap about our Trustpilot reviews? She's like, just, you know, this is how I do it. And why? It made a lot of sense. So here we are, year eight, we're still relying on the voice of the customer to close the gap between company logic and customer logic. And there's like always a gap between those two, and you want to try to close that gap. Reviews are a great way to do it.
Reviews are awesome, because number one, the customer is telling you what they're doing, but they're also, I like what you said, you're speaking their language.
Right.
So you're picking up a client where they're coming in at. Like, that's one of the things that we talk about in our marketing, is get inside their brain where they're at.
And got to meet them where they're at.
If they're talking about lawn, if they're talking about turf, you know, the nomenclature of your client, like, know what the things are that he needs to, that he's saying and how he's saying it. That is a huge, huge nugget. If you're not writing that one down, write that down, the nomenclature of your client and reviews. So I'm going to jump back. How important are reviews? How important is social proof to your business at eight figures? How important is it?
Still crucial, maybe even more so than ever. So we got reviews all over the place. Our platform captures reviews about the contractors that operate within it, and we surface those to homeowners, that so they can choose who they want to work with on our platform. They sign up for free quotes. They can compare the quotes, read reviews about suppliers on our platform. So there's reviews there. That's crucial to our value proposition. So homeowners know who's good and who's not. And then outside of kind of like our platform, GreenPal itself, the app, the marketplace, the website is reviewed. And so in the App Store, Play Store, Google Places, Facebook, Instagram, Yelp, Trustpilot, you name it. Like there's another one called SiteJabber. There's all these places where reviews are accumulated, where people who are happy go and where people are pissed off go. And if you don't look good there, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt in the sales. It's going to hurt in the numbers. And it's going to hurt when it comes to the time to raise capital, if you want to do that, or sell the company. You really got to shine in all these places. And so it's twofold. It's one is a lot of times these reviews are awesome because it lets you know where you need to work. Like for us, the longest time, the first 3-4 years, one of our biggest problems was the guy that they hired just didn't show up on the day he was supposed to. And so we were constantly getting hit on this. Like, I hired this guy for Thursday. He showed up on the following Monday. And so we had to like take a step back and like fix the product at a product level that ensured that guy showed up on Thursday when he was supposed to. So like the reviews informed that, the feedback from the customer informed that. So on like a tactical level, it's free R&D, but also like on a product level, you have to bake into the product how you're going to capture this customer sentiment and then nudge them to go let other people know, because people aren't naturally inclined to go and like share that experience if it went well. I know I'm not. And like, I'm the first proponent of people leaving good reviews on the web. And I, you know, if I go to a hotel and everything went perfect, I'm not necessarily inclined to go on TripAdvisor and tell people, you know, but you have to like bake into the customer experience part of that journey to nudge them to do that. And once we started doing that, man, like we took off when it came to reviews, and it was an investment of company resources to do it and to pull it off, but it worked.
So you have like a review ascension for your client. So part of the client journey is
right. Right. It's not, and it's certainly you don't ask them to share their experience when they first signed up or if they're pissed off. You ask them like in a moment of like high dopamine, like you just got the lawn cut. Here's a picture of it. Wasn't that nice? It saved you 10 hours. And you left the guy 5 stars. Awesome. Hey, would you mind sharing your experience with GreenPal on Trustpilot? And that workflow helped us capture the sentiment of happy users onto the open web. Whereas if you don't build those kinds of customized workflows in your business, it doesn't even matter if it's not even a technology business. If you have a plumbing company, mm-hmm. you need to be texting people after everything was fixed and solved and paid for. Hey, how'd it go? And if it went well, ask them to review you on Google. That's critical. And it's just part of the game that you got to play these days.
Wow. That's huge, because that, I was just reading something recently, like a repeat customer is 60 to 70% easier to convert and cheaper.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like it's growth through retention almost. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, hey, we got to go get more customers. Do we? I don't know. Like we're flushing out 80% of them. Why do we need to go get more customers? We need to fix the reason why we're losing 80% of our people. Let's grow through retention. Then let's go get more customers. So it's like part of being a founder and part of being an entrepreneur is figuring out where you're going to focus on like this acquisition funnel. Like, do you focus on, you know, getting more awareness? Do you focus on acquiring more people, converting more people, retaining more people? Where do you focus? I think like the retention is the best place to start, because then you can build up from that good foundation. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a funnel. It's like get, keep, grow. You get the word out, do SEO, do blog posts, do podcasts, do whatever you gotta do to get the word out. Keep these people and then use them to leverage to grow to more. And it's like, where do you focus on the spectrum? I think focusing on the keep aspect first can help you build a good solid business that has durability.
Wow, that's get, keep, grow. That's a huge nugget for the audience. Like, focus on your existing customers, because if your existing customers are happy, then the business is gonna grow without spending more ad spend on bringing more clients in. And I like right. what you said, Brian, what you said was like, is let's look at it through a different lens. Is the churn 80%? And if the churn's 80%, we need to figure out why we're losing 80 to pick up 20 over here, and we're still down 60.
Right, exactly. And the inclination is to go focus on getting more customers over and over and over again, when in fact, if you're not holding on to them, you don't have a business. And you got to fix those things first. And it's like, that's happening to you. It's happening for you as an entrepreneur, not to you. Like, don't have this like, oh, like victimized mentality. It's like, no, this is happening for me so I can figure out what's wrong, diagnose and fix it. It was kind of like us. People were pissed off because the guy didn't show up on the day he was supposed to. We listened to that and we fixed it. And we did that before we went 50 states. Like, we spent 4 years in just Nashville, Tennessee, trying to fix all of these things to where we could hold on to users, hold on to customers and the keep aspect. And then we went nationwide, state by state.
Yeah. Fix your backyard, get it dialed in, get a system that works. And then once that system works, then start to scale.
That's right.
Which I wanted to talk to you about, because a lot of our listeners, the dream is, you know, seven-figure CEO. The dream is 7 figures in marketing. The dream is 7 figures. So, and you built 2 companies. You built 1 company that was absorbed by another company, which was probably an amazing like feat, because there was a lot of cash flow that came in, I'm sure. So tell me, what's the number one mistake that entrepreneurs make going from 7 or high 6s to 8? What does that journey look like? And remember, the audience, some of the audience, let's just be honest, some of the audience has never made any money online. Some of the audience is right. They're 6-figure, 7-figure coaches, but all aspire to hit that $10 million mark. Kind of tell me what that journey is and what's the number one mistake that people are having when they go from 7 to 8?
Yeah. So there's a couple things. One is, entrepreneurship is full of all these dichotomies. And one is like, you have to have this big goal. And that might be, I want to run an 8-figure business, a big goal, but you also have to think and act very, very, very small. And so a lot of these small things add up and compound over time. And so to go back to the video game metaphor, maybe lay it out 10 levels. What does each level look like? What's it going to take to get through one level at a time? And don't get hung up on the 8 figures just yet. Let's get to 500K. Then let's get to 750K and let's get to 1 million. Let's figure out how to get to 2. Then let's get to 3, 5, and let's lay that out. And like, you can even lay it out like a video game almost and figure out what it's going to take to get through each level. And then when you're in the level, don't worry about anything else. Just get through that level, slay the boss at the end, then go to the next level. And that is a way you can kind of chew your way through this. The problem is, and I know I've been guilty of this, it's like, I've worried about like 8-figure problems when I was only doing 100K in revenue. And it almost does not matter. Like, it almost does not matter. Like, you just got to get your first 250K, learn, and then apply those learnings to get to the next level. And how do you get through these levels? Like, how do you level up? It's like, in business, you're going to be doing 3 things. You're going to be working in the business. You're going to be like working in the business. So if you're a Facebook marketer, you're going to be in Facebook's dashboard panel. You're going to be looking at the analytics. You're going to be creating copy. You're going to be writing copy. You're going to be working in the business. Then that's going to be most of your time in the first early levels. And then you're going to be working on the business. So on the business, how do I get new customers? What's my marketing strategy? How am I measuring the effectiveness of my clientele? If I want to hire somebody, what does the training program look like? How do I recruit people to come to work for me? What does my brand look like? What does my reputation look like out there on the open web? All these things, you're working on the business. And so in the early days, it may only be 10 or 20% of the week, but you also have to work on the business. And then the third thing is, you have to work on yourself. And so you have to read the books. You got to listen to the audiobooks. You got to listen to podcasts like this one. You got to go to YouTube University. There simply isn't enough hours in the week for you to learn the skills you're going to have to learn to play this game at a high level. So working in the business, working on the business, and working on yourself. And that's where I get hung up, where people are like trying to start a business and they're trying to do it like 30 or 40 hours a week of effort. I'm thinking, man, I don't know. I've built 2 8-figure businesses. That wasn't how it worked out for me, because it's like, there's only so many hours in a week. You got to do all these things. And if you're going to be going through these metaphorical levels and leveling up and learning the things you got to learn, your car or your vehicle has to be a mobile classroom. Your living room is going to have to become a classroom. You're going to have to dedicate an hour, 2 or 3 hours a day to learn the tactical skills, to learn all of the things from people who have already done it, from people who are doing it, who have already done it. You got to absorb and internalize that info and then put it back to work in and on your business.
Yeah, that's 100%. Success leaves clues, and you can just follow. I love what you said. Like, your car is a university. Your living room is a university. Everywhere is you're always learning. You're always getting better. You're always molding yourself into that 8-figure entrepreneur, 7-figure entrepreneur
right.
that you want to be. And I like what you said, the levels in your business, on your business, on yourself. Those are huge nuggets for most people. And guys, in network marketing, a lot of people think that, you know, you got to be in the business, you got to be on the business, and you're going to work on yourself. But I like what Brian said. He was in the business. He's in the business. He's figuring out what the issues are. He's on the business because he's figuring out how he's going to get a little bit better. And then he's working on himself. So there's revenue. There's some revenue first. So like, if you're just learning and learning and learning and learning and learning, one of my mentors told me this, don't be a personal development prostitute.
Yeah. Golly. I mean, it's so true. It's like, it's like trying to be an MMA fighter and you've never sparred. And like, you've just sat there and read the books and you might've even like had some coaching and you know the technique, but you've never sparred. You've never fought a fight. And you're going into the octagon. That's what starting a business like is like. If all you do is just like go to the conferences and read the books and listen to the, I mean, you got to do that stuff too, but you also have to apply that stuff and execute into real like experiential wisdom, because nothing replaces experiential wisdom, getting a product into the hands of your customers, serving your customers, making money and figuring out how to solve their problems and make a profit off of it. Nothing replaces that. And so you have to do it all. And, you know, for me, I set time apart during the week to work like, or during the day to work on myself in the business and on the business. I literally manage that time. It's like, okay, it's 3 hours of BS I got to do because nobody else can do it. And then this is 3 hours of high leverage stuff where I'm really looking at the numbers and I'm really figuring out what our team's doing. I'm really trying to hone the systems. And then in the evening, rather than watching something on Netflix, I'm popping up YouTube. And I'm watching some kind of conference that I couldn't necessarily afford or go to that might have been 10 grand to go to. But guess what? It's a year old, but now it's all on YouTube for free. And I mean, that's like for us, we're a marketplace, and there's a conference called Everything Marketplaces. That's like 20K to go to that they put out a year after it came out, and it's free. I watch it like all the time. And so it's like, this stuff's for free. It's within our, it's like right there. There's no excuse.
Everyday Marketplace.
Everything Marketplaces. Everythingmarketplaces.com. And then there's the Marketplace Conference. And those two resources have taught me more about marketplaces, how they tick, how they operate, how you can architect them. Like, I watched an interview the other day with one of the lead marketers from Uber, who was deploying like a $1 billion marketing budget. And he was talking about how they did it right there. And I look at the bottom left-hand corner on the on YouTube, and it had 14 views. I'm like, this is insane. So the information's out there.
That's crazy.
Yeah, right.
You know what I like about what you said is like, Everything Marketplace is not your niche. Like, it's not, you're learning the marketplace. You're learning from other people. And
right.
What I want the audience to see here is, sometimes your companies only want you to train what they put out. But remember, if you're in real estate and you learn from a car salesperson, or you learn
absolutely
from, like, the sales process is the same with a different delivery system.
Right.
I just want people to understand that the marketplace, Everything Marketplace and Marketplace Conference, it's not like Brian's going to, hey, I just want to know how you're building your, you know, how is your app working that delivers lawns? No, it's like, how is your app working that delivers groceries? How is your app working that delivers this?
Exactly.
All it's all relative and it's all business. So
I've learned more from the guys over at Rover.com, who is like Uber for dog walking, DoorDash, Postmates, even Uber, Lyft to a degree. And then a lot of other niche marketplaces. That's who I learned from. I kind of like almost copy their moves and apply it to my marketplace, which is in a totally different industry. But a lot of these fundamentals and these strategies can be ported and adapted. And that's how I've learned. And you know, we haven't raised any capital. So a lot of these companies have raised, you know, 9 figures in capital. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, I didn't have that huge marketing budget. I had to learn from others that were deploying that kind of cash and learn from what they were doing, what was working. And that's been one of our keys to success.
Yeah, that's huge. And I like what you said. So I'm going to ask you 2 more questions. Number one, what's the number one paid resource, service, or tool that entrepreneurs or marketers should be using? And why is it a mistake not to be using it?
So I think part of the problem with learning stuff online is there's just so much crap, and you have to like funnel through all the crap to get to the good stuff. And nobody ever tells you what the good stuff is. Like I almost have had everything I've ever found out that was valuable. 90% of it's just come from me toiling over YouTube and watching the crap and like stumbling upon the good resources. One that I've stumbled upon is Authority Hacker. And those guys really get into the tactical aspects of SEO and SEM and just like the execution at a tactical level, what's working, what's not. They're very pragmatic. They're very practical. It's no fluff. That's my style. And I really like that resource. And they have some premium stuff that I've bought, and don't be afraid to pay for something that's good. So if you're trying to market online through organic search or even through paid channels, I would recommend looking at it. At least watch everything on their YouTube channel. It's all free. Why not?
So Authority Hacker, what we'll do is we'll put that in the show notes. So if you're looking to scale SEO, if you're looking for a place to start, like Brian recommends Authority Hacker.
Yeah, even like a place to start is a very good point too, because these are practitioners. So it's like if you're just getting started, you don't know crap. That's a great place to go because these are guys doing it. So it's a lot of times, man, you come across resources and it's just not practical. You can't put it to work. So that's why I like them.
Perfect. Yeah. We'll put those two in the show notes. So I ask this question all the time. And if you listen to my podcast before, you guys know exactly what's coming up right now. So Brian, I want you to think about, you're going to the biggest app convention in the world, maybe 250, 300,000 people. You're the Sunday. It sounds like you've been to events before. You're the Sunday speaker. So you're the reason, like your face is the front of the ad. Your face is the front of the banners. So you just delivered your Sunday afternoon speech. Like you crushed it, like boom, 40 minutes. Everyone's rah-rahing as they stand up and turn around, and as they're walking out of the stadium, 200,000, 300,000 people, you're the banner's up there, you're at the front, you know, doing your thing. What's the one phrase that they remember Brian Clayton by?
Get in the game. Get in the game, because only when you're in the game can you win. Put me in the game, coach. Get in the game. A lot of people on the sidelines, a lot of people think they're in the game, but they're not in the game. So get in the game. That if I could leave them with one thing, it's that: get in there, get in the trenches, roll up your sleeves, execute, learn, rinse, and repeat.
Nice. Get in the game, learn, rinse, and repeat. Brian, thank you so much for the interview. It was super awesome. Guys, always stay to the end. And like I said, everything that we talked about will be inside the show notes. Stay to the end. I always give something away for free. So make sure you listen to the outro, and I'll catch you guys on the next episode of Burnt Phone Marketing Radio. Talk to you soon. Thank you so much for your listenership and your continued support of Burnt Phone Marketing Radio. This is Eric Sablon. And as a bonus to you, I wanted to give you guys a free strategy session with me. All you have to do is go to www.burntphonemarketing.com/book-a-call, and we will set up a strategy session to help you get unstuck. So that's www.burnphonemarketing.com/book-a-call.